Lani, you're a sophrologist, and are you ready with the standard answer to an answer to the standard question, which is what is sophrology? That's a weird word.
Yeah, sophrology is a weird word. So sophrology is the study of conscious harmony of your mind-body connection. But to just kind of drill that down, it's basically happiness training, because it's the dynamic way of meditation that we use through breath, movement, and visualization creates a transmission of serotonin and dopamine between the brain and the body, and that results in feeling calm and happy. So we just say sophrology is happiness training.
All right, and the thing that one of the takeaways I have from it is that if you work on those areas on your emotional and mental state, it has benefits for your physical state as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we definitely so the thing that underpins sophrology is biological values or your physiology. So we aren't usually really conscious of the sensation in our body and allowing our body to teach us things through the sensations that we feel or the movements of our body. And so we really focus a lot of sophrology on physical sensation, a lot of integrating into the body and how it feels. So when we do meditation in sophrology, we're grounding in the body and we're very present in the body, so we can identify the sensation and have biological values, we call them.
Okay. Well, you asked me last night, what do I have something you want to talk about today? And I had to admit, I the issue of scapegoating had come up for me. I can't quite remember why now. But when you look around, if you focus on scapegoating, you see it quite a lot. You can see it culturally, you can see it individually, you can see it within families. I'm talking about it as, I guess you're projecting some degree of unhappiness on to someone else. It's certainly nicer to think about someone else's problems than yours. It's you get a sense of relief from pointing the finger instead of having the finger pointed at you. It's not, obviously it's not a healthy dynamic mentally, but I guess also or culturally. But again, with sophrology, it probably is not good for us, the person doing the finger pointing either.
No, it's not. I mean, scapegoating. So just to create some frame of reference for scapegoating, it refers to individuals or organizations who use language or rhetoric to pass on the responsibility for taking fault or having problems. And so they project their trauma or their problems onto other people so that they don't have to take the responsibility for it. That's basically what scapegoating is. Mm. We definitely do it. You mentioned it happens in families, which is a very sad thing, where one person all of a sudden holds the collective burdens of the family. Mm. Which is sad, just that unconsciously happens in families, where all of a sudden one person is held to blame for everything. But as far as individuals go, scapegoating kind of frees us or gives us permission to pass along what we should take on as responsibility for ourselves, and recognizing that everyone's got some trauma and some triggering and some issues going on that we all need to own up and accept for ourselves, and then work through those things. And healing and working through anything is hard, and it takes time and it takes effort. And no one wants to do that, so let's just scapegoat, because that's way easier.
Yeah, I mean, we get that no one wants to do that. I was curious, when I first asked you about that, whether it would fit into the sophrology approach to health.
It does. So the way that we handle, when we start working with a person, sophrology is based on four attitudes or four agreements. And so when I'm working with a client or with a group, I talk to them about the four attitudes, which are be curious, be present, notice judgment, and notice aliveness.
Okay.
We're not necessarily very curious as we grow up children are curious, but as we grow up, we're not curious. We don't ask helpful questions. We don't ask questions in a state of just wondering, being open to, like, there's not really an answer. For scapegoating, we are very judgmental. We choose to take our own perceptions and project them onto other people, saying that my way is the right way, your way is the wrong way, or, you know, we can scapegoat all of our challenges and problems. You know, at the end of the day, we can come home and feeling really, you know, like we've had a really bad day, and then we're just projecting all of our energy onto other people. Mm. So with being curious, we're able to just open up ourselves and notice, like, aliveness in our bodies and notice what's going on with ourselves and recognizing, oh, you know, I'm not feeling really great right now. So I need to be really cautious and careful about how I enter the house right now and approach my family, because today hasn't been great and I don't want to project that onto the family members.
So it does actually fit, like you said, one of the four, what did you call them? Like the four tenets of sophrology. That's not the right word.
There are four attitudes.
The four attitudes. And one of them was about judgment.
Yeah.
So for sophrology, obviously that's actually really important then, because it was a thing I wasn't sure of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you take a look at, so unhealthy judgment. So judgment's necessary in life, right? We have to determine danger and non-danger.
Yeah.
So we do need to judge situations, but unhealthy judgment creates turbulence in the mind, and then it interferes with creative possibility and just trying to be able to see things from various perspectives. When we use unhealthy judgment, we make the other person wrong. We feel a certain way. We look at things in a certain way. We have certain opinions and perspectives, and we cling to those, and we're not letting go. You know, we become very stubborn in our subjective outlooks, and it creates separation, which then creates loneliness and challenges within relationships. So judgment causes all kinds of, you know, unhealthy strategies in a variety of situations. And we don't really notice that sometimes judgment and our scapegoating is at the root of the unhealthy relationships that exist in our lives.
Mm. I guess behind scapegoating is a feeling like negative thoughts about ourselves, that we're not good enough, that we're rubbish, that we don't deserve good things. I don't know, all those sort of negative thoughts, that we're not a good person. And you really don't want to dwell on that for too long. I think the stronger those thoughts are, I'm guessing, and I'm not the expert, my God. I'm starting to talk like I am, but I want to emphasize, like, I'm kind of reaching for something here, that if you're in that kind of bad place, you're probably going to be more likely to go for scapegoating and less likely to have that self-awareness.
Yeah. Yep. You will. And some of that is going to be associated with generational trauma. There's some things that are stuck in your nervous system. And also with the rhetoric that you grow up with, where talking about maybe racial discrimination or classifying things in a certain way based on the rhetoric within the household that you grow up in and the lessons that you're taught as you grow. And then that scapegoating happens. There's a issue with, obviously it's a big issue, but in terms of having our own self-confidence and projecting that onto others, there's that phrase, misery loves company.
Yeah.
And so if we're miserable within ourselves and we don't have a very high self-esteem, we don't have a lot of confidence, we don't have a lot of respect for ourselves, we just want to bring others down, because by putting others down, we can lift ourselves up in a very negative way. And so again, you're projecting your feelings about yourself onto another person and staying stuck in that mindset of, creating, shutting down relationships, using your ego as a form of defense. It creates violence, violent behavior. It's just irrational behavior that doesn't, it just suits no one in the world.
Yeah.
It's not helpful. Yeah.
And I guess we saw it during COVID, obviously. People were on edge, and which we all understood. And so there was a lot of finger pointing at people breaking the rules and things like that, although people shouldn't have been breaking the rules either, because there was, when it's a population issue, like a disease that runs through a population, there is only one way to kind of deal with it, and everyone has to be on board for it to be effective. So it was understandable that people were struggling with that, but I guess the fear made the scapegoating stronger. And in fact, Raglan, thinking about it, Raglan was scapegoated. We when COVID turned up here after it escaped from Auckland, so Auckland's fault, not ours. let me slip a little bit of scapegoating in there. Like the nation's media descended upon Raglan, and I was downtown on the first day, and there was hardly anyone here, so I got interviewed, and they put a microphone under my nose and were like, "Do you know that Raglan's X percentage behind the national average in vaccination rates?" And so that was their big thing, and there were lots of news stories about anti-vaxville Raglan and all this kind of stuff, really unhelpful while the community's under stress. But that was like, that was nationwide scapegoating there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all fear-based.
Yeah, and I should say when the actual statistics came out for area by area, we were just pretty average for a rural community. Nowhere near the extreme at all that they were portraying us as. So it sold some newspapers, though.
Right. Well, exactly. And it also, because, I mean, Raglan's going to be the first place people are going to look because of the reputation that Raglan has around
truly.
Natural ways of living and approaching life. And it's also just a short distance from Auckland. So let's go down there and bother those people.
Yeah, true, actually. Yeah, it was a quick trip for the camera crews.
Yeah, so, but it was all fear-based. And, if you really want to look at COVID, the whole thing was all, let's establish some fear so that we can control people within that space.
It certainly, there certainly was a lot of fear being projected around through the media and from the health department.
Yeah. So, when... The important thing that we look at with sophrology is learning, we're into those four attitudes: to be curious, to be present, to notice judgment, and notice aliveness. And so if you're in a space of curiosity and you're listening to the news or other people talking, you can be asking questions instead of being a sponge and just taking in and allowing yourself to sponge up what everybody's saying and causing your nervous system to freak out and your heart to race, your blood pressure goes up. When we're in a state of curiosity, we're open to the possibilities, instead of just immediately accepting things and going with a fear-based attitude, we can just ask a bunch of questions and wonder, is this really, should I, really accept what they're saying, or is there other ways I can have a look at this? And so with curiosity, we become present in the body, we notice the sensation in the body, and then we recognize our ability to be open and learn not to judge and to be willing to let anything in without deciding first if it's good or bad. And just being open to receive more information, more knowledge, which then allows us to feel more alive because we actually are gathering information and we're not closed off to what's going on around us. And we're also not closed off to each other because we need each other. And a few months back, we talked about loneliness and how it's an epidemic. and can cause, you know, a lot of problems for our health and well-being. And scapegoating causes loneliness and disconnection. Mm. And that's the last thing we want as a human species, is for loneliness and disconnection.
So can I ask, can I jump in, Lani, and just ask for you, like, when COVID arrived here, you've obviously practiced all these skills that you're talking about. Did you find yourself having to make use of them at the start of COVID?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, well, it's become a way of life for me now, where I'm not really aware that I'm using the strategies, but I'm using them.
Okay.
I don't deliberately. I mean, it's just now how I live my life. So yeah, breathing strategies. I can immediately feel a sensation in my body and recognize a breathing strategy that I should use, or maybe I've had some experience with a meditation that I've done as far as visualization goes, or I can focus on the cellular structure of my body and balance myself. And then also recognize when my thoughts are harmful towards other people, because we are wired to actually love each other. we're naturally born to love each other. And so when we aren't doing that, we're feeling stressed. We feel stressed. So if you really tune in to the judgments that you're making, and it's a unhealthy judgment, your body will respond in an unhealthy way, and you'll hold on to those stresses, and it'll cause illness and sickness in your body.
Mm. So did you go, when you first discovered sophrology and were learning about it and applying it to yourself, did you have some surprises about what was happening within you? You're like, I must be focusing on something that I shouldn't have been, or.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely an awakening. But mostly just like a beautiful awakening to realize that, when I can actually be aware and live in a state of awareness and a state of curiosity, everything is beautiful. Like, you know, you're in a childlike state where you can be happy around new things and be open to, what does that even mean? Or, you know, just, I mean, you watch how children play and how children accept each other. And it's just wide open. Like, yeah, come and play with us. You know, and we're not like standing there looking at them and going, well, I'm not sure if I like your helmet and your skateboard. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, let's all hang out together. So when I was studying sophrology and learning these strategies, it really was, having the knowledge of an adult, but being able to give myself permission to respond in a very open, accepting, childlike way, and having a lot of curiosity, and also allowing other people to present themselves as they are, rather than me trying to judge them and put them into us, putting a square peg into a circle or something.
Round hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess that was another thing during COVID. You could have been in a situation where you're like, well, I'm all calm. Like, what's going on with you guys? Sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, for example, when it became mandatory to get the vaccination, some of the things that I coached people on was, it's not about the fact that it's mandatory. It's what do you value most? So identifying your reason for getting or not getting the vaccination, and you determine for yourself if that's valid for you or not. And then you're getting the vaccination based on what you decide for yourself, or not getting the vaccination based on what you decide for yourself, and not because I'm not getting this vaccination because somebody told me I had to, and so I'm just going to stand my ground and not get it. Whereas maybe in reality, you might have wanted to get it for some other reason. Like, I studied all my life and I want to keep my job, or I want to travel overseas and see my family, or, yeah, you know, different reasons for getting the validation, getting the vaccination or not getting the vaccination. Like, you determine for yourself what's best for you, and then you're getting it or not getting it, not because it's mandated and you're standing up for yourself, but because it's a choice that you're making for yourself.
Interesting.
And so that was another part of the COVID process and using sophrology as a strategy to identify for myself and use my power to make my decision to do what I feel is best for my body. And no one's telling me, no one's mandating it for me. I'm choosing. I'm making a choice.
So we kind of need to wrap up, but folks, have been talking to Lani about scapegoating. And I mean, I guess the first point of that is how do you notice if that's happening, or how do we notice that's happening within ourselves? That's probably right at the start, isn't it, of doing something?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it all starts with you getting to know yourself and developing self-confidence, having the self-confidence to own up to, you know, your responsibilities, take charge of your life, recognize when you're behaving in an unhealthy way, recognize when you're distancing yourself from other people, and just trying to be in a space of calm and happy. When your mind and your body are in a state of calm and happy, you have brain clarity and you can respond in a healthy way, not only for yourself, but for the people around you. And so being in that, you know, working, it's hard work. It's not easy. This is why we teach sophrology, because it's a hard thing to do. It's not something you know, we're not going to get finished this conversation. And then when people listen to the podcast, they're like, oh yeah, okay, I'll just do that. And then they end the podcast and all of a sudden they're not scapegoating. Like, this takes hard work, and it's very, intentional and dedicated work that you do over a period of time in order to get yourself into a healthy place where you can be calm and happy, you can be curious, you can be present, you can choose to use healthy judgment rather than non-healthy judgment, and you're just living life fully in an alive, aware state of existence.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time this morning, Lani. Where can people get you if they want to get hold of you? Or I know you've got a website.
The name of my business is Sophro Solace. It's spelled Sophro. Sophro Solace @gmail.com is my email, or my socials are also Sophro Solace @Sophro Solace.